So, welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the lunch. We're now going into the second part of the Ripe Day, and that'll also be the final session of our program. We've got three presenters. They're all Ripe NCC staff. And the first one is going to be Paul Rendek. He's going to be chatting about the membership and stakeholder survey that we completed in 2011 and some of the results we got from that.
Isn't this the end? There we go. That does it. Yeah, I'm there. Thank you. Hi there. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Paul Rendek, and I'm the Director of External Relations for the Ripe NCC. And I'm going to give you an update on a very important project and activity that took place this year, of which I think many of you in the room would have been involved in. And that is to give you just a quick update on the feedback that we got from the membership and stakeholder survey. So, background on the survey, this was the fourth large-scale Ripe NCC survey that we've done, requesting feedback from our membership. A big difference from this year was that not only did we actually seek feedback from our membership, but we opened up the survey to let other stakeholders reply and give us their feedback on what they thought of Ripe NCC services and activities. The survey was carried out by the Oxford Internet Institute. We wanted this independent organization to actually carry out the survey because, of course, that gave everyone the anonymity to give their honest replies to us. We used discussion groups as a basis for the survey. There were a lot of trips that were taken around our region. One of the trips was to Moscow, where we also invited a range of our members and other stakeholders from here to actually help us build the survey in the first place, so to give us the kind of questions that they would like to see in a survey like this. So, of course, these discussion groups were quite valuable in building the survey itself, because I think that if it's a survey that you feel you want to fill in and it belongs to the membership and the stakeholders, you'll fill it in well. So it was the largest response we ever got from a Ripe NCC service, from a Ripe NCC survey, 825 in total. I think there were a few more responses than that, but some of them were not valid. 680 of them were from our members, and 145 from other stakeholders. We consider this quite a big number, considering it's the first time we've ever opened something like that up for other stakeholders. And by other stakeholders, I mean government bodies, telecommunications, regulatory authorities, these kinds of stakeholders in the internet. So as you can imagine, quite a large set of the responses came from Western Europe, with 455. I think that the interesting figure here is that from the Russia and Central Asia area, we had 91 responses. That's fantastic, because that's a lot more than we've ever gotten from this region on another survey. But at the same time, maybe a little bit low considering the amount of members that we have here. But I'm very pleased that we got the 91 responses that we did get from here, because it really gave us a good idea of what the membership here in Russia and Central Asia is thinking. That's great. And of course, the day of the highest response was May 30th, and the reason for this, it was quite funny, was that we gave 5 iPads away randomly to those that responded to the survey. And one of them was actually won by somebody here in Russia, somebody actually quite remote, in a city quite remote, nowhere near Moscow, which was great. The gentleman was completely surprised that he had won his iPad, and it did manage to get to him, so that's quite nice. So, the Ripe NCC services, we asked you to rank these. I've listed them here. I'm not going to walk through all of these. This presentation will be up online. You can go and take a look at this at your own leisure. But, of course, the registration services this time scored the highest. In the last survey that we had, it was the Ripe database that scored as the highest service or the most important service to our membership. This time it was the registration, the registration area, which is really no surprise. The average overall scores were high, 5.9 out of 7, so we're quite pleased to hear that our membership does support and think that the Ripe NCC is doing a good job. And that's great, you know, to get good positive feedback. But, you know, I myself went through every single one of the responses together with a few other folks at the Ripe NCC, and I wasn't looking for somebody telling me that the Ripe NCC was great. I was looking for what we needed to do to actually, you know, either fix some of the things that you don't like or actually provide services that you don't see coming from the Ripe NCC. So the most notable requests that came in from the Ripe NCC members and stakeholders were, and this is, I put members and stakeholders because oddly enough, it was great to see that there were some overlaps in what stakeholders thought the Ripe NCC should be doing and members thought the same. So, and these were these points here. More multi-platform services such as live chat, video conferencing, so that you can actually speak with us not only via email. That tells us something. Our membership is slightly probably changing from maybe some of the old times where everybody wanted to do everything by email only and didn't really want to have any time talking in person or seeing anyone on the other side. More statistics, measurements, and analysis. This is brilliant. This is something that the Ripe NCC is working on. I know that soon we will be launching some of the results from information services area. This is something that of course, governments and other stakeholders want to see more of as well. I mean, we sit on this great, enormous set of resources, the data from all the IP addresses, and we do want to make sure that we supply statistics for people to be able to do their work. Easier access to tools, so the tools that the Ripe NCC has, that was also brought up, and more help and information on IPv6. And that, obviously, we're taking quite seriously because we do have an active program inside the company. We do a lot of promotion, a lot of work with industry partners on the deployment of IPv6 and making sure that the message is there. So some key findings. I scrunched all these together. Sorry that the slide is so full. I just wanted to have as few as I could here. The areas that we kind of saw notable findings coming through in the database, this was seen as a very important service. When I went through all the responses of this, people were really actually saying that they wanted us to make sure that the quality of the database was maintained. They thought that was very important. So we do have projects underway to make sure that the data quality is sustained and moves that way, but we definitely will be taking this home to heart. IPv6 in the area of IPv4 and IPv6 administration, most of the responses that came back there we saw actually was to facilitate transfers and monitor registrations. So we will certainly be doing that. I think there's been a lot of policy discussion around there. Ripe NCC is also working on its procedures on what happens with transfers. Work with all stakeholders to understand their role and responsibilities in IPv6 deployment. That was also came through very much in the survey. We will be stepping up these activities in 2012. I think any of you that have seen our activity plan for 2012, you would probably see a lot of focus on IPv6. So we're happy that we have that there because it's something that you obviously want to see. Training and education area. More online and multilingual training was requested. And I can tell you, anything that came in to the Ripe NCC that had anything to do with multilingual mainly came from this part of our region. So we have listened to that. I know that we do have a lot of things translated into Russian. I'm sure that we can do more of that. We are looking into those kinds of things. But training and education, more online training was requested, and also providing more videos and kind of practical guides. These seem to be quite popular when the Ripe NCC produces these, so we'll be looking at something like this too. And in the area of internet governance and just general external relations, what we saw is that people wanted us to provide more outreach to other sectors and regions and other stakeholders. And again, an overwhelming response came from not only here, the Russia and Central Asia area, to this supporting this effect, but also from the Middle East area. So it's great. Well, we're here. We do come twice a year to see you. So I'm hoping that we provide enough, that we've got enough of contact with each other in that. And the last bit was liaising between governments in the internet community. I think that the members felt that, you know, we are very much involved in what happens in internet governance. We are represented there quite well together with the other industry partners like IETF, ISOC, ICANN, and the rest. The RIRs, we do play a prominent role in these kind of governance forums, whether they're local or global. I think that the RIPE-NCC name is firmly there, and we certainly support the technical community and make sure that we carve a place for ourselves there so that the technical community is heard. So that's brilliant, and I think we will continue doing work like that. Again, that's pointed out in the activity plan. So the next steps, well, we're incorporating these findings into the activity plan. We saw some things that we wanted to up that came out of the survey, so we're giving them a little bit more presence. And we're looking at this from a long-term strategy point of view. Myself, together with the other senior management team and our director, Axel Paulik, we've taken the survey results, we've scrunched them down, and we're taking a look at where we're going to plug those into the various areas of the RIPE-NCC. And improving awareness of services among all stakeholders, this is something that we feel we really need to do. A lot of people were not even aware that we had certain services out there, so I think we need to do a lot of work even inside our membership there. I think sometimes, you know, we feel that we send a lot of mails out or that we communicate with our membership, and we feel that we do quite a lot of that, and maybe sometimes it's not reaching some of the people. So, and of course, we want to solicit feedback more regularly. It's great to have a huge survey like this and get a whole pile of information that just lets us be able to figure out what activities we're going to concentrate on, but I think it's really important for us to get feedback all the time. And again, this is one of the great things about coming and seeing you here at ENOG meetings and regional meetings that we do, is that we do get feedback from you and we do get to communicate face-to-face, and that's brilliant. So these are the next steps we'll be looking at. And what I can say is that we certainly plan on actually getting back to you so that we can show the results of what we felt was important and what we brought into our activities and services. So over the year, next year, we'll probably be publishing these things in our newsletters to our members, and we will definitely be reporting on the progress that we have at the right meeting. So, and with that, there's a URL for the survey. You can go through the responses. There were thousands and thousands of them. I can tell you that I read them all in the south of France over my holidays. It was piles and piles of paper. If you'd like to do the same, here's the URL for you. Are there any questions? Is everybody digesting? Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Paul. So moving along, RPKI came up a little bit earlier when we talked about the policies. So here's a gentleman, Mr. Alex Band, who can definitely tell you a little bit more about it. He's been working at the NCC with RPKI for quite a while now, and hopefully you can shed a little bit more light on what it's about and where we're planning to go with it.
Yes, that looks like my presentation. It even works, I can't believe it. Hello, my name is Alex Band. I'm the product manager at the RIPE-NCC, and one of the projects that I work on is the resource certification project, also known as RPKI. Why is the RIPE-NCC involved with this in the first place? Well, we are the authority on who is the registered and legitimate holder of an internet number resource. So a block of IP addresses or an AS number, it's what we do. The registry is the core of every service that we provide. And we were looking at different ways of providing you with a tool to use certificates and to use this registry data in order to do different things. And, of course, accuracy and completeness is absolute key. We need to be sure that everything we have in the registry is accurate and is maintained properly. And the reasoning was, well, if this is our mission, then we could also issue a digital certificate that offers you validatable proof of holdership. a digital X509 certificate that you can use to make claims, to make statements about your resources. That is essentially what resource certification does. Now, this is all based on a standard, an open IETF standard that comes out of the Secure Interdomain Routing Working Group. And it's essentially just standard X509 certificates with RFC 3779 extensions for IP addresses and AAS numbers. That is all that we're doing. These certificates, they're issued by the regional internet registries, and you can obtain one of them, and you can use it for different purposes. And I'll go into those different purposes a little bit later on. But in essence, the digital certificate states that an internet number resource was registered by the RIPNCC. So outside of the registry, so outside of the WHOIS database, you have some tangible, validatable proof of holdership that you are the legitimate holder of a block of addresses. You can request them. It's a free opt-in service, so you can. There are different ways of getting them. And you get one digital certificate that lists all of the internet number resources that are registered to you. The certificate itself is linked to the registration, and they're renewed every 12 months because we sort of tied it in with, for example, your billing. We at least once a year have contact with you, so we know that you really are who you say you are. We know that you are still in business. We verify that you really are the holders of the internet number resources that are listed. So we verify this every 12 months, and based on that, we renew the certificate. Now, mind you, that the certificate itself, it doesn't actually list any identity information. If you are the holder of the certificate and you can use the certificate to make statements, to make claims, then you are deemed as the legitimate holder of the address space. I mean, you don't really need to know who the LER is in order for you to use such a certification system. Now, it may seem a little bit abstract, but let me try to put it into practice a little bit more. The RIPNCC, we have a root certificate. A root certificate, so we set ourselves up as a certificate authority, and we have a trust anchor. And this self-signed root certificate contains all of the IP addresses that were handed to us by the IANA. So this root certificate listing all of the slash 8s and all of the blocks that we have, it's sort of a blueprint. It's a template that you can use to issue child certificates. So this child certificate that we hand to you is, so this is a hierarchical model. This goes one level down. And you have a certificate sitting under that with the RIPNCC as the parent that lists all of the blocks that were handed out to you. And this, too, becomes a certificate authority. This is also an RPKI engine. And using this child certificate that you have from the RIPNCC, you can issue other child certificates, for example, to your customers or to the subdivisions within your company, or you can use that certificate to make so-called, in technical terms, attestations, which is essentially a statement or a claim. Well, what do you use them for? Why would you want to do this? Well, there are different applications for using these certificates. First and foremost, this is a means of making our registry more robust. We didn't have a means of offering you validatable proof of holdership, and now we do. This is something that you have. It's issued to you, and you can make claims about your address space. It's actually kind of practical. And as we move into a world where we run out of IPv4 space, trading of IP addresses will become more prevalent. There will be more demand. There will be a bigger desire for people to do this. It's quite obvious. Now, if somebody offers you a block of IP addresses, how do you really know that they are the legitimate holder? How do you know that they didn't offer it to somebody else? How do you know if a transfer was successfully completed? And this is something that you can use these certificates for. So you can use them to secure and legitimize resource transfers. It's actually kind of practical. And the last thing you can do with them is actually make statements that you can use for routing. And that's an interesting That's an interesting aspect, because you can make a claim about who, for example, is authorized to route your IP addresses. And this is an application that we have actually built. This is available right now, and you can use this to make better informed, more robust routing decisions. And what it offers right now is BGP origin validation, so you know, well, this particular block is announced from this particular AS number, and this announcement was authorized by the legitimate holder of the addresses. But ultimately, this is just a stepping stone to providing a more comprehensive set of routing security, including BGP path validation. But all in all, what we're doing here is providing an infrastructure that network operators like yourselves can use to enhance your business, to make it easier for you, to help you, for example, in routing, to help you, for example, with transfers. This is what it's for. It doesn't create any additional powers for the regional internet registries. All that it does is provide you with a tool set. And that's what we're doing. Also, how you manage these certificates is completely your choice. We've learned from, well, DNSSEC adoption that if you force everyone to run their own certificate authority and take care of their own key management, that adoption will be fairly slow. So we decided to offer you a choice. On the one hand, there's an open source package that you can download and use that can be used for getting a certificate and using it to make these statements, to make these attestations. But if you're like, well, I don't really want to be responsible for my own key management, my own rollovers. I'd rather depend on something that the RIPNCC offers because they have a secured system in place and, you know, I'm fine with using that. Either which way you choose, you have a choice. You can either run a certificate authority yourself or you can rely on a hosted system that the RIPNCC offers that sits within the LAR port. Now, the application that we've built up to now is just for routing security. And let me show you how that works. You get a certificate, and you use this certificate to say, I authorize this autonomous system to originate these prefixes. Now, the only thing that is tied down within this system is that you can only make such a statement using IP addresses that you are the holder of. So you cannot make an attestation, you cannot make a claim about IP addresses that are not yours. And this is the whole power of the system. This is something that is validatable by others, so they can run a validation tool and they can say, ah, okay, I see this statement, I run a validation check on it, and I can be sure that it has its integrity. I'm sure that this can only have been created by the legitimate holder of the address space. And that's the real power of the system when you, for example, compare it to the Internet Routing Registry system. Because the Internet Routing Registry system, it has security within, for example, the RIPE database. But in total, there are 34 Internet Routing Registries, and they don't all have the same security measures. So if you start looking at a root object as you would find it in an IRR, you're not 100% sure that that is valid information. You always have to take it with a grain of salt. There is some interpretation there. And this locks it down completely. It's validatable proof that the statement was made by the legitimate holder. And this statement is, I authorize these autonomous systems to originate these prefixes. In addition, you can make a claim saying, and I only allow the prefix to be deaggregated up to a certain point. So you can say, you can announce it as a /21, but if you announce it, for example, as 2/22s, I don't authorize that. So you also have control over aggregation. This allows other network operators to base routing decisions or routing preferences on this data. So as I said, only the legitimate holder of the address space can create a valid root origin authorization object. And this statement, it affects all of the BGP route announcements that live out there. Because if you see a certain route announcement in your Cisco, your Juniper, in whichever router that you have, you can say, okay, I see this route announcement. Am I supposed to be seeing this? Is this route announcement authorized by the legitimate holder of the addresses? And these root origin authorizations, they can provide you with an answer. And the answer can be, one, yes, this is a valid root announcement. I found a root origin authorization, and this is a good one. This is okay. It can also be invalid, where you see, I see this root announcement, but there is a root origin authorization for that prefix. However, it's not authorized to be announced from this particular AS number. And this is, for example, where you have the YouTube versus Pakistan Telecom hijacking as an example. They started, Pakistan Telecom started announcing prefixes that YouTube were the holder of. And then to BGP, it's like, well, obviously, this is the shortest path. I don't really know. Maybe Pakistan, or maybe Google set up a data center in Pakistan. I don't know whether this is authorized. And this system provides you with an answer. And the last status is unknown. And that is, of course, now the vast majority of the data out there. So if you now have a root announcement, well, there's not really any root origin authorization for it because there's not that much adoption of the system yet. But that, in a nutshell, is what it is, the application that we've built with regards to routing. Now, let me give you an example of what we've created within the LAI portal. So once you've enabled this system in the LAI portal, you can go to Add Root Origin Authorization. And the first thing you do is you fill in an AS number. And this can be any AS number that you authorize. The second thing is, well, I'm going to give it a name. And then the third step is dragging one of your resources, so one of the prefixes that you hold, into the interface. You can click it to edit it. And the optional field here is the maximum length. Here you can say, I only authorize it to be the prefix to be deaggregated up to this point. So in this example, it's a slash 22. You can either leave this field blank, which only authorizes that AS number to announce the entire block as a single prefix, so you allow no deaggregation at all. But you can also fill something in, for example, slash 24. So that authorizes that AS number to announce it as a slash 22 or as a couple of slash 23s or as multiple slash 24s. So there's lots of options there. So in this example, I fill in slash 24. The system also does IPv6, obviously. You can set a start and an end date to set the validity. So if you're like, you know, I only want this information to be valid for this period of time, and then I'm transitioning to authorizing another AS number, for example, if you're migrating from one system to another. But this is completely optional. And the last thing is just adding this root origin authorization. This cryptographic object is now published. This is something that sits in the LAI portal, but this is also something that you can do yourself. So you can also run this engine locally on your system, and you can also publish this information yourself. It's completely your choice on how you implement it. The system is distributed in design, and it's modular in its implementation. The validation tools are capable of grabbing all of the information, starting at the trust anchor, going down the entire certificate tree, and getting all of the information from the different publication points. So you're not reliant on a single repository. If you want to publish this information yourself, or if you say, I would like this third party to publish it for me, then you're completely free to do that. Next. Come on. There we go. So we want to make sure that the data in the system actually has high quality. Because if you're going to be basing routing decisions on such a system, then you have to be absolutely sure that it can be depended on. So what we did is we took our routing information services route collectors, so the route collectors we have all over the world that process all of the updates, all of the BGP updates that are done. So we have a map of all of the 400,000 route announcements that are out there, as seen by our route collectors. And we compare that to the route origin authorizations that you have created. And we show you within the interface whether you've created a valid or an invalid route announcement. So to make sure that you reflected your BGP structure entirely. So you accurately reflected your BGP setup. Because you don't really want to create any invalid. Then there's publication. Publication, as I said, is something that can be done by the RIPE NCC. It can be done by a third party. You can do it yourself. You're completely free to choose how you implement it. Each regional internet registry has a repository. That's a given. I mean, that's just there, and it's available for you. Now, all validation tools, they grab the trust anchor, so you point them to a certain a trust anchor locator at the top of the tree, and it will follow everything down along the path and getting all of the information. So it gathers the information, and it creates a local cache on your system. So you're basing this information not on a data set that lives in the cloud. This is something that is gathered and processed locally. So validation is done locally on your system, and your routing preferences are based on a local data set. How many people have done this? Because we launched this at the beginning of the year, and then I thought, well, this is going to rival adoption of IPv6 and DNSSEC. This is going to be bleeding-edge technology that is going to be a couple of years out, and there's not going to be a whole lot of adoption. But then this happened. So well over 700 LARs have set this system up and started creating these root origin authorizations with the system, allowing other people to validate this information and start basing routing decisions on it. So out of these 700, about 60 LARs are in Russia. I just checked it. So roughly 60 are in Russia who have set this up. And that includes, it sort of spans the entire range from very large LARs to extra small ones. And these are all of the root origin authorizations that have been created by these members. So there's actually a fairly good amount of adoption of such a system. Then I want to talk about the actual validation and making BGP decisions based on this data set. We've created a validation tool with a web interface, and it periodically checks all of the repositories and it gathers all of the data. And then, of course, you need to be in the driver's seat. You don't want to rely on this data set and have it make routing decisions for you. So you can apply your own filters to the local data set, and we've built that right into the validator. So you have all of your ROAs, you have all of these statements about these route announcements, but you can say, no. I'm fine with this data set, but whatever statement is being made about this particular prefix, I want you to ignore it. I want you to create a complete override for it. Also, you could say, well, there isn't a root origin authorization for this particular combination of AS and prefix, but I want to make one myself. I want to create a local whitelisting of a prefix. Because all of these ROAs, they're like positive statements. There's no such thing as a negative statement with a ROA. Like, I don't authorize this AS number to originate these prefixes. That doesn't exist. It's only a positive statement about a ROA. So, about a route announcement. So you can add a local whitelist if you want that. And then, because this is an ITF standard, and there's actually broad industry adoption of it and broad industry interest, Cisco and Juniper actually make an implementation for this within iOS and Junos. And it's scheduled to be released somewhere in the beginning of next year, so Q1, Q2, 2012. You should be expecting this as a free update in Cisco and Juniper routers. And what this does is that your Cisco and Juniper, they will be able to talk to this validation service. So they collect the entire data set from using all of the root origin authorizations, remove all of your ignore filters and add all of your whitelistings, and that entire data set can be fed directly into your router. And based on the three validation states, so valid, invalid, or unknown, you can set up root maps, you can set up preferences, so you can configure it in whichever way you want, so you can really make this tangible. This is how it looks. So this is the web interface. As I said, you start at the trust anchors, then you go onto your ROAS, you add your ignore filters, your whitelists, and that feeds directly into your router if you want to. What we also made is the ability to export the entire data set as a comma-separated file, so you can use it in maybe an existing RPSL-based workflow or whichever way you make routing decisions. Here's an example of all of the information. So you see on the left column, you see all of the AS numbers. In the column next to it, all of the prefixes, the maximum length, and where it got the information from. And as I said, this ultimately should be integrated into routers. You don't have to use this. You can also use it outside of the routing system. Quagga also has an implementation called BGP Secure Routing Extensions that is available as an open source project as well. So this is slowly growing and spreading out. I hope you find it interesting, and I'm really keen on getting your feedback on where to go with this system and how it should be developed to make it as useful as possible. Because as said, I mean, what we're doing here is providing a platform to help you to offer, on the one hand, network operators to enter information in such a system so that other network operators can base decisions on it. There's nothing that the RIPNCC does or has any additional power over. It's just an infrastructure that is there for you to use for your benefit. If you want more information, go to ripe.net/certification. You can also search for the RPKI hashtag on Twitter. I make sure that there are regular updates there, and lots of other people who are involved with the project, they make sure that they use the hashtag as well. Does anyone have any questions?
Небольшой комментарий по поводу RPKI и возможного его использования. Не думали ли вы о том, чтобы сделать специальный патч для Кваги, который бы из всей роутинговой таблицы выбирал те анонсы, которые вы считаете невалидными, и после этого реанонсировал их уже роутером, который роутит трафик, с каким-нибудь комьюнити, которое означает убить этот анонс. Таким образом, мы можем сделать так, что даже те устройства, которые никогда не будут поддерживать RPKI, на самом деле смогут его использовать.
That's actually interesting. There is a project already. It's an open source C library that sort of replicates the functionality that you're after. So this is something that is already being worked on. I'll make sure that I'll send you a link to that project. All right. Any other questions? No? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Jochem Raag. I'll give you a short update on some NCC stuff and some statistics. And then the bulk of my presentation will be about financial processes for Russian members, Ukrainian members, and on the charging scheme 2011. Membership developments. Well, I think I just want to show you a bit what's happened. And we still see quite a strong growth. What I want to point out is that over the last 6 or 7 years, we've almost seen a doubling of our membership, which and it's continuing. Also this year, we have more than 500 new members also coming from this region, but it's across the board. So we still see strong membership growth, and we do expect that to continue also for next year. When you look a bit where it's spread, we have quite an evenly spread, I would say. Eastern Europe, it's about 25%. Western Europe is about 28%. Northern Europe, 23%. Southern Europe is a bit smaller, 15%. Outside RIPE region, that's mainly international companies who register with us. Part of Asia, that's largely the Middle East. And then to show you how it is per country, well, Russia has been our largest country for the last 5-6 years. It's the only country in our region which has more than 1,000 members. So it's 1,027, I think, even at the moment, which equates to about 14-15% of our membership. Then you see the usual suspects, UK, Germany, Italy, France, Holland, quite some Western European countries. But you see it's quite a broad spread. Then I just want to quickly run you through some tickets and responses, how busy our registration service department is. And we keep quite closely track on this, especially the CEO, Andrew. And I think key is for you to see here is that we do see an increase in number of tickets. Only last year, in 2010, we had a lot of 2701 tickets where we actually contacted you and end users on updates. And this year we didn't. We do notice more tickets in regular requests for initial and additional allocations, also because of the run-out fairly policy. Well, here you see the number of tickets. So that's actually the number of requests and then the responses. Well, they quite closely relate. Of course, we're a bit below last year, also because we actually have a bit less tickets because of 2701. Here you see the different categories in what we get tickets for. PA request, that's the assignment request. It's a bit below last year, but actually we expect by the end of the year it will be above. PI request is very high this year. It's probably going to be our biggest PI year ever. AS numbers, same. We're just a bit below, but that will be recovered over the next month. Registry issues, that's sort of a bulk miscellaneous area where all kinds of issues are addressed, new LERs, but also issues you have in the registry records. Additional allocations, well, we do see an increase here. This is mainly an effect of the run-out fairly policy, where the window for what you can request address becomes smaller and smaller. So actually the allocations we give to LERs becomes a bit smaller and smaller. Initial allocations is on a similar level. As I mentioned, we do see a continuous influx of new members. So this is quite stable over the last 3 years. Good news, last item I want to show completely to the right for you. It's the V6 allocations. It's up. So that's good news. But just to show you a bit more on on PI assignments, well, you can't read the details, but I'll just mention to you the blue is Russia, red is the Ukraine, and green is Poland. And what you see, those three countries from 2009 up to 2011 increase enormously in number of PI assignments. And for 2011, it's about 60% of PI assignments come from these three countries, Russia, Poland, and Ukraine. Especially, well, I do see Poland shifts color a bit, but because they move up second, but we see an increase in all the areas. V6 PI assignments, well, we see a bit of different. Of course, the number of PI assignments in V6 is a lot lower, but we do see a different picture, and actually these three countries don't reflect such a high number. Okay, I just have a little pause before I start with the financial. Are there any questions on these stats and general overview? No? Okay, good. Okay, admin and finance and the processes. Well, key, I think, for you is that this year at the general meeting, the general meeting adopted a new standard service agreement, which incorporates the existing standard service agreement and the standard terms and conditions. There were some concerns from people that we had to re-sign a contract with every member like we did 7-8 years ago. This is not the case. So we don't have to sign a new contract because in the existing contract you signed in the past, there's actually a clause that makes sure that we can change these terms upon a resolution adopted by the general meeting. So there's no need for re-signing. And I just wanted to confirm that we'll keep the same set of documents we now give you to make payments, and we actually won't change the text that much. I'm just looking at the English text because we use the contributor in wording, and we might change that. But we won't change actually the Russian version of the invoice documents. So just quickly running you through what we have as a structure. Well, this is sort of a standard slide I had for the last three meetings here, but just to be very clear on this. So you sign a framework contract with us, standard service agreement. Then there's per transaction, per payment, there's a separate service agreement and the act of acceptance, which we sign and stamp and send to you. We clearly talk about a service fee, not a membership fee. Russian VAT is not applicable, neither is Dutch VAT. For you, it's most important that Russian VAT is not applicable. Well, the service fee, so there's no withholding on the income, and it's deductible. You can always request from us a proof of residency. We've actually published this on the website. We publish it for every year. So let's say you have an old invoice where you still need all the documentation for. It's published. You can just download it from the website. We don't supply an original certificate because we can't supply every 1,000-odd members with an original certificate. You can always request it from the Dutch tax authorities if you want one, so and we can help you if you really need that. But in principle, you can just download it, and that's an original copy. All documents are dual-language documents, so we're also translating the new standard service agreement, which will be published shortly. And yearly invoices are possible for you. I know most of you choose to pay quarterly, but it is possible to pay yearly, according to our local lawyers here. Well, so what documents do we have? Well, we have all documents in English and Russian. We have a fact book online, and we have all the templates online. And I just want to show you where that is. It's sort of under the member support section on the website. And all new documents we'll have will publish there as well. So the new standard service agreement will be there as well. Then payments. Well, we've looked into different payment options for Russia. And we actually had the option to open a bank account here in euros or in rubles. But it proved, some people mentioned to me, that actually it won't help since we're still a Dutch organization. And then it still is an international transfer. So we currently still have only the bank transfer to a euro account in the Netherlands, or you can do it online via Triple Deal. But actually, we're looking at a different option, and some of you members suggested this on the membership survey, and it's called Kiwi. I think that's the right pronunciation. And it's actually sort of a Visa virtual, and it uses sort of a virtual card with 16 digits and a 3-digit CVC code. We're looking into setting that up. And it would be really good if you could give me some feedback whether that would be helpful for you and would make payments easier, because some people suggested it. I'm not 100% sure if we can set it all up, but we probably can actually do it via PayPal on our side and then have Kiwi on your side. That's at the moment what we're looking at as a solution for this region. We're looking at other matters for the border area with direct debit, maybe possible and ideal, which I don't think works here. Are there any comments or feedback on Kiwi? Sergei.
I will comment in Russian.
Yes.
Could you please return to the previous slide?
What? Sorry?
Could you scroll back?
Yeah.
Yep, stop. Посмотрите, пожалуйста, здесь речь идет о методе платежа под названием Kiwi. Скажите, зачем реализовывать суррогатные методы платежей совершенно непонятными совершенно непонятными посредниками, когда можно просто реализовать, например, был банковский счет, или прием наличных, или агент по приему платежей здесь, в России. Зачем изобретать такой велосипед? Спасибо.
Well, if that's your feedback, then let's not implement it. It was just to make it easier for you. Some people commented that it would make life easier for them since they use it.
Could you imagine, for example, 10,000 euro payment through Kiwi? That's impossible. This is a cash box machine.
Okay. Yeah, that could be the case. It's probably, but do realize about 8 to 850 Russian members are quite small. So for them, it would make life maybe easier. So I understand for the larger payments, it probably might not be a solution. But for the smaller payments, I think this could be an option. But if you tell me it's not an option, then I don't know. Does anyone else have experience with Kiwi, or positive or negative?
I'm not a Kiwi user.
Okay.
У меня есть еще замечание по поводу лир-портала. Возможно ли сделать на лир-портале, чтобы лир видел состояние своего счета? Допустим, если они платят больше денег, чем выставляют им счет. И еще по поводу Kiwi. Насколько мне известно, у Kiwi есть ограничения на сумму платежа. То есть ваш крупный платеж тоже будет разбит на части. Соответственно, это тоже нужно будет учитывать в лир-портале. Спасибо.
Okay. So making available the account status and whether there's still open invoice. We do have some information on the LAR portal, and the invoice will be there, but we don't have a full overview of all the detailed invoices and whether they've been paid. We're actually looking at quite a big upgrade of the whole billing system, and this is something we're looking at to implement probably in Q1, Q2. So I hope to be able to report back next time that we'll have this available in the LAR portal.
Здесь есть еще одна, ну, не скажу, что проблема, но просто как бы такая сложность, что большинство, в общем-то, лиров в России – это организации, да, а все вот платежи, которые вот вы написали, что они, скажем так, прорабатываются, да, они все связаны, в общем-то, с наличкой. В России исторически наличка есть, присутствует, да, и как бы, но в большинстве своем считается как бы не совсем легитимным способом оплаты. Так сказать, я не говорю, что это невозможно, да, но рассматривать изначально как бы, ну, скажем так, не вполне легитимные способы, да, по мнению местного законодательства, мне кажется, не совсем корректно.
Okay. Thank you for the feedback. Okay. Well, I haven't heard anyone jumping up and down about this payment option. I think we'll just continue looking at different options. And if you have suggestions, please email me. We're open to suggestions, and we're still evaluating whether we can facilitate this and make life a bit easier for you and for the Ukraine. Charging scheme. Well, I put here 2012, but then I thought it's actually not the charging scheme 2012, it's the charging scheme 2011 I'll be talking about. So what happened? Well, I should have done this yesterday night, but... well, yeah, you too, Paul? Yeah. Okay, so I think the members were quite clear in what they thought about the new charging scheme. Maybe next time we can be as clear, Paul, regarding the vodka. So what happened at the general meeting? The charging scheme was voted down, the proposed charging scheme. What happens then is we actually fall back to the old charging scheme, the charging scheme of 2011. So that just continues to be valid. So what do we have? We have five categories. It's the same fees as before, your fee individually might change because maybe you have more resources than before or less, depending on what you've done over the year. We have 50 euros per independent resource assignment. For direct assignment users, the people with a separate contract, it's an extra small fee. Independent resource from one customer, so people who are requesting resource on the same day from one customer only get one-time fee. And the first V6 allocation has no score, so it has no fee. Well, these are the fees. You're used to these because you had them last year as well. They stay the same. This is the billing categories. This has shifted very slightly, but here you see in what category you fall based on the score that is calculated upon the resources you have in your registry. We have the usual split, about 20% extra small, 55% in small, 20% in medium, 4% large, and just 1% extra large. We put in a lot of effort, I think, from the management and the board to really come up with a new future-proof charging scheme. But I think we didn't succeed in that way. Well, the members at least didn't agree with the way forward we chose. So we're taking a step back and we're evaluating. The board had a meeting, I think, 2 weeks ago on a Friday, and they decided they want to have quite a small task force to look in detail at the principles and the process of the charging scheme. I think those are two key aspects. So what kind of principles will we use for a future charging scheme, and what process? There were quite some comments from people who said actually they didn't like the communication, they didn't find it timely, they struggled with the timing throughout the year for the charging scheme. So I think this is a really good opportunity to look at that. Next week, the board will decide how to move this forward, and then in the beginning of next year, we'll pick this up with a small team comprising of NCC management, board members, and some members will be involved to take a good look at the charging scheme and how we can actually bring a good new proposal forward to the general meeting. This will then be discussed in the May meeting. We'll get feedback, discussions, and then over the summer we can decide how this is going to look and adopt it, hopefully. So that's the presentation I have. Any questions, comments?
I'm not sure that you're the one who should be asked, but at general meeting, there was pointed that at the next meeting, we should have activity plan with amount of money per activity. Maybe some preliminary information already available.
The next week there will be a board meeting, and we're actually prepared quite a lot more detail in the budget draft. So maybe then, based on those documents, there can be a bit more discussion on whether that's the level of detail members are comfortable with, and how we are going to publish that also towards the future and report on that. So I think it's work in progress, and next week we'll take the next step in that direction. Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, that was our last presentation for Ripe Day, so we're going to close things up now, a little bit early for the first time of the 3 days of the meeting, so I'm quite proud that my chairing enabled that. Since we've got a few minutes, are there any other topics anyone wants to come to the microphone and discuss, talk about while you've got the opportunity? No? Okay, then. Then I think it's time to thank a few people. As you can imagine, it's quite a bit of effort to organize such an event. And especially when the people that are organizing at the NCC are in Amsterdam, we're trying to organize a meeting here in Moscow, so we always need to have a local host, and the local host plays a very important role in helping us do that. This time around, it was the Moscow Internet Exchange, so please help me in thanking Moscow Internet Exchange for acting as our host for this meeting. Of course, these events also cost money. The NCC does financially support these events. However, we need even more money than what the NCC uses to support it, so we need sponsors. And you can see a list of our sponsors up here on our left and right. I'm not too sure if I've got it in my... I do have it in my presentation. So these are some of our main sponsors, and we also have some media sponsors that help us promote the event, so you can see them all there. We talked about mailing lists. Enog also has a mailing list. Yeah. Okay. discuss@enog.org. I think most of our calls go out to let you know about the meetings and so on. A couple of other people I shouldn't forget to thank is, of course, the Enog Steering Group. They do a lot in putting together the ideas, where we're going to go, and so on. And, of course, the Program Committee, who gets all the presenters together and gets them up on stage and works through which presentations they feel is most appropriate for the audience. So having said that, of course, I'd like to thank all the presenters we've had over the last 3 days, including the NCC staff who came here to do today's presentations and the workshops as well. And last but not least, of course, I'd like to thank all the attendees for making the event what it is. I guess you're the most important part of this event, of course. So what are the plans? When are we going to see Enog 3 and 4? They are planned for the time being because, of course, we've got to go and have a look at locations and get funding aside and so on. But it looks like Enog 3 will be in Odessa, most probably the end of May. And if all goes well, I guess I can already say that we're planning to hold another meeting here in Moscow at towards the end of next year as well. So there are two more lined up. Have I forgotten anything, guys? No? Okay, then, well, with that being said, thank you all again, and see you hopefully in Odessa. Thank you.